This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Tim White. He's the global head for government and intelligence with a company called YARC, Y-A-R-C, YARC Data, which is a Cray company. And there are listeners who are old geezers like me who can remember Cray from back years and years ago. And Cray is kind of changing a little bit the way it offers its services. And I think it's a well-known brand with a brand new mission. Is that right, Tim?
It is. I mean, it's an exciting time to be at YARC Data.
Yeah.
We've got focused exclusively on delivering solutions for big data. We have an appliance that does that, and we feel like we'll be able to provide a new way to look at big data solutions.
Well, before we begin the interview here, Tim, let's maybe our listeners are saying, well, Tim White, I mean, why is he working with YARC Data, and what capabilities does it have to help our listeners understand big data and maybe different agencies here? Tell us about your background, how you wound up with this organization, please.
Sure. 20 years with the Army, 13 of that active duty, most of that with Army Special Operations. My last 8 years, I've been with General Dynamics, working several national security programs, supporting Department of Homeland Security. So tying those two pieces together, along with some other diverse pieces of background that involve both with the military and outside and education and medicine, other areas, is a perfect fit for a multidisciplinary approach to approach big data.
So you have a background both with commercial and with federal enterprises, and so you can have a good perspective on some of the issues from both sides of the coin here, huh?
Exactly.
Good. Well, give us, there are some listeners that know Cray and some don't. Maybe tell us a little about Cray and then what's happened here with the new division that popped up, I think, just in February.
Sure. Well, Cray is a fantastic company. I mean, it is the supercomputer company focusing on high-performance computing. They developed several fantastic technologies that have made advances both in the intelligence community as well as in the commercial sector. So YARC Data is a different approach. YARC Data was started specifically in February and kicked off.
Just 2012.
To use the XMT technology and our appliance Eureka to be able to deliver that big data graph solutions to a larger audience. We're foraying out into areas where, just like the rest of the IT infrastructure, I mean, everybody is becoming an IT expert because you need to be able to access and use it. Really, it's not just your IT shop that has to be smart on big data and be able to deliver and share information. Everybody needs to be able to do that. So we're taking that same approach, and our foray into big data is the Eureka appliance and YARC Data.
So when you think about supercomputing in the 60s and 70s, you think about massive amounts of data and Cray computers kind of figure out how to handle it. And then they did it again and did it again. They've done it over many different years, and they've kind of changed with the times, of course. But I think just that ability to handle large amounts of data would give them some kind of a leg up in understanding newer ways to handle the big data challenges that are presented today.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, vector processing, which high-performance computing does, specifically in supercomputers, the vector processing requires a large batch load. So the input and output of data is one of the main restrictions. I mean, consider that a real bottleneck when you're trying to do some analysis on big data. Cray has fantastic technology on that and has been a leader in that aspect of the industry for a long time.
You mentioned earlier XMT. What exactly is that?
So XMT is the chip that goes on to the Eureka appliance. Very interesting in that it runs 128 hardware threads on a chip as opposed to running 8 you would see on a normal quad-core standard processor. So it has massive multi-threading that you can utilize across large sets of data. I mean, the big discriminator we have for our appliance is that it's global shared memory at an enormous amount, multiple terabytes all the way up to 512 terabytes. So the large data that you can put onto this appliance and be able to run graphs on is something you won't find really anywhere else right now.
I was following one of my Twitter people that I follow, and they talked about an eBay sale of a Cray computer from the 1990s or something.
That's great,
and people
it?
Were buying them, going, oh, a Cray computer, and putting in museums. They're going, yeah, this is the best memory I had, this old Cray. So that's kind of funny how it's, you know, kind of all the way 30, 40 years, it's a trend right with us today.
Well, that's one of the, you know, the great things for me when I got the call from Cray that they were looking for someone to head up this government intelligence division. I mean, it's Cray, right? Been in technology for a long time. I've known it pretty much my whole life and been a technophile. Card carrying geek, I can say that very clearly. and when Cray called me, it was an amazing offer. Just to be involved with that company and its brand is something that's been very, very, I'm very proud of that, the fact that they gave me that call.
So Yark Data has a product called Eureka, U-R-I-K-A. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And so, everyone talks about the cloud. I was at a conference yesterday. I was just clouded out of my brain. Everything was cloud this, cloud that. And it was a cloudy day to begin with, too. So it looks like because it's an appliance, perhaps this is directed towards agencies that may not want to work in the cloud, that may want to have the server down the hall instead of down someone else's hall. Is that correct?
Well, maybe and maybe not. A lot of time there's government agencies, particularly in intelligence or law enforcement, that want to be able to handle data in a very secure manner and do that autonomously. And that's one way. But really, we see this as being an enhancement to any sort of cloud computing that a customer is using. I mean, our system gets integrated into the normal enterprise fairly easily. We've built it to where it really looks like it's a Linux box, which would be a normal IT infrastructure that would go onto anybody's enterprise system. The only differentiation you will see is that it'll show in your running top across it is that several terabytes of RAM on this one machine, which is, for most systems administrators, is going to throw a red flag to them because they're not going to be used to seeing that. But other than that, that's what you'll see. Very easy to use, easy to incorporate. We incorporate well with Hadoop, Cumulo, Cloudera, any sort of cloud solution for both data storage as well as for analytics. We incorporate quite well with those.
So really, you should view it, or our listeners should view it, not as a competitor to other organizations, maybe as a specialized tool that may fit the requirement if they have a need to manipulate large amounts of data. This may be the tool that solves the problem.
Right. Well, the Eureka appliance is very specific to being a graph analytics appliance. So large-scale graphs, and if you think of those as the nodes and edges on a graph, the bubbles and lines that connect it together, I mean, you'll see several visualization tools that utilize graphs, and want to bring that out to the foray so that a user can manipulate, examine data, do analysis on it. We are very specific in that we're the engine behind that to be able to deliver that graph. So we can run, billions and billions of what we call triples within a data store. We can run billions of those on even our smallest machine.
I was at your website this morning preparing for this interview, and there's a $100,000 graphics analytics challenge. Is that Yark Data's provide? This is free money. Come on, listeners, go get the free money,
This is a great thing. Well, the challenge is interesting. I mean, we're trying to encourage a move in the industry. I mean, really what we see is that we use Sparkle as the query language and the RDF structure for our data store. This is where I talk about triples, where you have an object predicate and linking these data stores together, linking together different aspects of the data that would be in a relational database would be more columnized or just, one-to-one relationship. So you can build multiple relationships out of that. RDF and Sparkle's open standard, and that's one of the things we think is really important is the fact that this is easy to access. So you could utilize our software component that you would see on our system. You can download that and actually be able to develop some expertise in it. It's not proprietary. We consider that to be the open standard for semantic databases. And we're leveraging that and encouraging it through that competition.
And that's what Sparkle and RDF are. They comply with WC3, right? Is that
correct? Correct.
So it's really not. I was going to toss out this word open source and where it fits in with your product. And I think that's tough to define. But I think before we do that, we'll talk about defining big data and fast data and complex data and all kinds of data solutions here. We'll take a quick break here. When we get back, we'll maybe do some definitions here. There was a study that was released just yesterday. It was a company called CSC. They partnered with Tech America. And all they did is had a white paper released, and they talk about defining big data. I mean, they thought that was really, pat themselves on the back. They finally figured out what big data is. But there may be some listeners here who are, very cognizant of what a predicate is and an object and of course, a substantive. And some people who are not aware of some of these terms. We get back to talk about defining big data and figure out exactly where your solution may or may not fit for our listeners. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Tim White, Global Head Government and Intelligence with Yark Data, a Cray company. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Tim White, Global Head of Government Intelligence with YARC Data, a Cray company. That is YARCdata.com. And if you go to YARCdata.com, you'll find out they have a challenge, and it's worth $100,000. And it's called the Graphics Analytics Challenge. We mentioned it before the break. Tell our listeners a little bit more about that, please, Tim.
So the challenge has a first prize of $70,000 and then several other small prizes. It is to really encourage the development within queries, Sparkle queries, against RDF. So we're trying to encourage the use of this, what we consider the open standard for the semantic web, the WC3 open standard for semantic web and semantic databases, development on that, writing queries against it. It's not something that's readily used in a lot of organizations. Most of them use a SQL, and this is a NoSQL approach, which is really where we see things going. So we're encouraging that development through this competition.
In fact, on your LinkedIn profile, you're a member of a local group that deals with NoSQL.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, I am.
NoSQL from Nova.
Yep.
I saw that. When I started preparing for this, I wrote down big data, and I just assume everyone listening knows what big data is. Well, it could be a challenge for some people, and maybe you have a different definition than I do. Perhaps you can share your definition with our listeners of what big data is. I'm sure that people are kicking around the cloud and big data and mobile. I mean, this is just so hot. From your perspective, what is big data and how will it fit in the worlds of my listeners, federal IT professionals?
Sure. So really, I think that when we talk about big data in an abstract sense, people are looking at either, you know, commodity hardware that is pushing the edge, the leading edge. And we think in terms of data stores that are in several hundreds of terabytes, petabytes, you know, moving up to exabytes with the anticipation of that. However, most users don't have that much data, and their problem's not that large. So based on what current infrastructure they have, is really that's a relative term for big data. I mean, if you examine big data and what the problems are the same, they're just at different scale. So a multiple petabyte solution for someone who has 100 gigabytes that they're storing might be a little bit overkill. So, you know, there's a relative structure to what's big data. So big data is defined fairly clearly as something that overwhelms the structure and the system and its processing capability. So just real examples, I've got customers that have 100 gigabytes of data and they can try to do graphs on that and they have a big data problem. They cannot do those graphs. They cannot run those queries. I have customers that have 24 terabytes, and a lot of people would giggle that 24 terabytes doesn't even qualify as a big data problem. But, you know, based on their system and what they're trying to ask and the questions and queries they're trying to run, it is a big data problem. Then I have a customer that has 5 petabytes and is telling me that they're going to have a petabyte added to that data system every 6 months. So it's really a relative term, and you have to look at it in that way, is that big data is where you're standing.
You know, I think it's shocking when you realize some of the figures that are out there with all the computers in the world today. You know, there's by 2015, there's supposed to be 1 billion smartphones out in the world. You know, there'll be 400 million tablets. All of a sudden, you have a situation where all these different devices are generated a lot of volume. So it may not be a wide amount of variety, but it could be a lot of volume. On the other hand, it could be a lot of quick velocity with millions of smartphones generating information. So when I think of big data, I think, well, it is a lot of it, but it also could be different types. It also could be like a fire hose coming at you. It's like trying to drink from a fire hose. So that all can be defined as big data. It's too much information or too much silo of information can be hard to manage, just too much coming in the door at one time.
Well, the big data problem, if you look at it, let's, you know, theoretically or strategically, I mean, right now they're saying there'll be somewhere in the essence of somewhere between 3 to 5 IP run devices for every human on the planet by 2020. So we're talking multiple billions of IPs, and thus IPv6 is an important part of as we develop the global infrastructure. But narrowing that down a little bit, you talk about data. One of the big things in big data now is, you know, not replicating data. And we're seeing the cloud as being an access point to be able to deliver data and not have it all stored in one spot, which is the, you know, the traditional commodity hardware piece is to, I want all the data in one spot. We look at our appliance and our device as really being some piece that someone can use to do that, because you want to bring a large amount of data in and look at it holistically, but you want to bring it in from disparate areas. So you leverage a cloud infrastructure to be able to deliver that into one spot and be able to look at it holistically and develop your analytics on that data set. That's probably the biggest challenge that people have right now, is that they're making the move from a very centralized architecture into one that's distributed across the cloud. The second part is that although the cloud provides you with a lot of analytical capability and data delivery capability, so you don't replicate. So you have five users and they all use one resource instead of replicating that to five different users, right? It's the reverse. At some point, you run into a problem because there's issues like network latency for being able to do very high-level computational problems, specifically with graphs, which are very, very intensive. And it goes back to our appliance, which has this massive multi-threading where we're running, you know, hundreds of processors with hundreds of threads on each processor against hundreds of terabytes of global shared memory. We've removed those bottlenecks for being able to do those computations. You bring it into the device, you look at it, you compose what graph you want to out of it, you do the analytics, and you continually update that. So it fits in well with this sort of distributed global piece that you talk about and how people are using non-replication data in the cloud to sort of simplify that big data global problem.
I was at a conference yesterday, and afterwards I spoke to a guy named Richard Spires from DHS. And very articulate gentleman, but, you know, the amount of information that DHS just has to you know, put together in one area and make a decision about it. I mean, I can't imagine the types of information he has coming in from all the different sources and trying to prioritize it and share it and not share it and how to work with it. And then I was at your website and I see that Yark Data tries to create unknown relationships. And then I read scalable real-time graphic analytics. Look for outliers. I mean, that's what DHS has to do.
Right.
I mean, they have to take and have to create unknown relationships. We don't know what's going on. Why would these two, and they would have to do, and then they have to, and rather just present it as a bunch of pages of green bar, you have to present it graphically because that, you know, the human eye is going to understand a lot better than looking at numbers.
Well, you want to make a graph is the way humans think. So that's one of the things we're pushing for is that we believe that the graph and that visualization, everybody understands that visualization is one of the keys to big data. That's bar none. Everybody across the board is using some sort of visualization tool. What we believe is that the analytic component behind it, if there's certain queries you cannot ask, you cannot run, then you start shaping your analytics against the hardware, not against the problem. So let's have the hardware match the problem. And that's what this does. We've made hardware and an appliance that is able to fit whatever problem that someone can come up with. So, you know, when we talk about data, I think this is a great point with DHS. So really, a colleague of mine called it the Maslow's hierarchy of data.
1970s, you know, he was popular then.
Right. Well, for data, he brings it in and says, at the bottom line, I've got this pyramid with the bottom end, the very long one is, I need to do search. You know, simple data mining of historical data. And I liken that to doing statistical studies, which, you know, normalization, I want to look and find out where the mean is, the median, the distribution of that. And I want to try to somehow normalize the data where I have an understanding of it. And the second is that I want to be able to do some sort of testing, hypothetical testing on that. And if I can run one or two or three algorithms and I test them over time and they work, then I want to be able to do that. And at the high level, do something that's predictive. Well, I will add a step to that and say you want to do something that's prescriptive. You want to have all those feed up to each other and at some point come to where you can say to a decision maker, if you make this decision, here is the outcome you can expect. So decisions are made with more precision. So backing that down. Right now, DHS is just conglomerating, trying to bring together the data that they consider relevant. They're not including data they don't consider relevant. And they're not doing it because of the
unknown
fact
that
they're overwhelmed right. by the data they've got. So within that data, there's unknown relationships. But then let's start adding stuff that they would not normally have put into play. So when you think about law enforcement, a lot of times you're not going to say, within law enforcement, I'm concerned about weather. But it could have an aspect that could help with an investigation. It could help with an understanding. And, you know, really good investigators are very good analysts, both law enforcement as well as intelligence, as well as people in the financial community. And they start understanding, they intuitively reach out to these external data sources. I've run analytical shops with several hundred analysts, and all of them do that. I mean, they will reach out and start searching using, you know, common internet, Google search type activity to bring in that other anecdotal type information. Well, if they're having success anecdotally and repeatedly, in my mind, you want to incorporate all those other data sets. So then it's a huge data problem, right? It overwhelms you very quickly.
We're talking about big data with Tim White. He is the global head of government intelligence with Yark Data, a Cray company, and their motto is a well-known brand on a brand new mission. We kind of danced around the topic of DHS, and there are other agencies in the intelligence community that are considering using different types of applications to discern information. Perhaps we'll take a break and come back and talk about where this this conversation can lead. Boy, I don't want to get arrested here. I'm just going to be dancing around this. There are some organizations in the intelligence community that may or may not be interested in big data, and we'll talk about this after the break. Whew, I don't want to get in any trouble here. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Take a little break. Come back. Tim White, Global Head of Government Intelligence with Yark Data, a Cray company.
Are you on Facebook? Do you Twitter? So does Federal News Radio. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio Facebook group. For the latest in federal news and government contracting, visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Tim White, the Global Head of Government and Intelligence with Yark Data, a Cray company. You can get more information at YARC Data, yarkdata.com. They probably have a blog there. Is that right?
They do. And yeah, we have several of our data scientists, engineers, and even myself, I call myself the knuckle dragger out of the crew, that provide some insights.
I'll be blogging about this at my blog. You can go to Google and type in Armature John Gilroy, and it'll pop up, and I'll put a picture of you in there, and we'll talk about this interview, and I'll talk about, well, the FBI almost arrested me after opening up my mouth. I mean, obviously, I think we're talking about big data, and there are intelligence organizations that are interested in big data and looking for solutions, and they're probably listening to this show going, well, I don't, maybe Cray has something that we can look at, and maybe Yark Data's got something to look at, and that's the whole idea, is just letting my audience know that there's new different tools out there they may want to consider.
Well, I can say we have several deployments at government customers within the intelligence community.
That's all we can say. I'm not going to say it anymore. Give me a list of all your customers exactly what. Oh, yeah, then I'll be in prison tonight. I don't even want to say that. Yeah. So there are members of the intelligence community that are taking advantage of some of the creativity that Yark Data provides. That's a nice,
absolutely
safe statement to say. Because I look at this and I go, oh, outliers. I mean, people in the IC community, they look at outliers all the time. If they can have a tool that'll improve the way they can find outliers, well, then they'd have to at least consider it or look at it or maybe even deploy it. So,
well, the one thing that we'll say is that, you know, it's one thing to say bigger and faster, and that's something that everybody's going to strive for. One of the things we say is that this is a whole different approach. You can eliminate the known pieces that you have. You can look at those outliers. You can add data sets, different data sets rapidly. You can extract the different data sets rapidly. You can run multiple queries. I mean, one of the things we look at with the Eureka appliance is that it's really a hypothesis generating engine, right? Something along the lines of pointing towards like a machine learning type activity. So you can run hundreds, if you will, of different algorithms against the data set to determine which ones are actually giving you the returns you're looking for, which ones have some functionality to it. You know, when doing that historical study, we talked about the statistical and the descriptive piece, and we want to move into that predictive area. Being able to do that is something to run hundreds of queries against big data. I mean, you know, hundreds of terabytes doing queries that return against, say, 50 or 60 different data sets and returning a 1 terabyte graph back out of a query. To run 100 of those, we're talking a lot of work, right? But we're doing this on one of our smaller machines. We're doing this where the returns are in a few seconds. So, right, it takes a few hours to run 100 or 1,000 queries, but it doesn't take months. We're coming to an understanding of the algorithms for our customers that give them the results they want rapidly within a few days, a day or two, as opposed to just doing an examination of the data, which could take months.
You know, there are listeners who heard the word Eureka, and I thought of Ron Reagan. That's where I went to college. No, it's not with an E. It's Eureka, U-R-I-K-A. So you can type that in your little Google machine and find out more about it. So it's U-R-I-K-A for kind of a new and different way to handle big data. And the reason we're talking about big data is because we have sensors that are out there collecting information. We have mobile phones. We have stuff from the web. We have electronic health records out there. We have sensors in hospitals collecting data. I mean, the poor people in healthcare IT, no wonder they're suicidal. They have so much information, and they're juggling this. And I'm sure there's applications in the healthcare world for big data, probably with the genome sequencing, I would imagine.
Absolutely. I mean, we've had customers with National Cancer Institute and the International Biologic Society. My French is not very good, but it's that the organization where we're looking at things like genetic structures and differentiations in proteins within different cancer cells. And when we do this, it's really it's great to be in a room with a room full of scientists, and you show them something, and they are impressed and awed, and really we're able to discover things they wouldn't find otherwise. I mean, one of the little caveats we had was that in looking at this genetic coding. Our guys pieced together to where we had a relationship between the gene for red hair and colorblindness. I mean, there was a disparate but a definite link between those two. That's the kind of stuff that is not readily apparent and found. And really, are scientists going to go out and try to find a link between those two? Probably not. Now, what does that link mean? Or the fact that you could find that link rapidly using our device? Well, it means that there's probably other links out there that wouldn't have been found otherwise, right? That could be 7, 8, 10, 20, 30 degrees of separation, but could have some significance as far as influence. So a degree of separation, and in very simple terms on a graph, people think in terms of that if you have, you know, more connections to one node or something, you know, then it must be more important, right? Or no, it might be that that outlier, that one that has one connection, is more important. And it could be that the weight of each one of those edges, in other words, the relationship, you know, how strong is that relationship? How much effect does it have on each aspect of that other connection point? And, you know, even though something could be very, very separated, 30 or 40 degrees, it could have a high influence on what you're looking at. And being able to find that 30 to 40 degrees of separation is something that just is almost impossible with anything other than a global shared memory appliance like what we have.
Well, earlier I asked you to find big data, and when I listen to you, I keep thinking of graphics and data, and I'm thinking of the term business intelligence, and then it's always coupled with predictive analytics. And so is that where your company is heading, or are you just supplying the information to let another group of people do the predictive analytics? Where do you fit in that kind of continuum?
So again, I go back to that we're the engine behind it. You know, the visualization and the algorithms that we have that customers want to run, I mean, we want to be able to run those. So within the financial sector and particularly investitures.
Well, big data, I never thought of that. Big data there.
Huge big data. And those are customers of ours as well. But the big point is that, you know, they had this great term, and I love this. It's called the forbidden queries. And in my mind, you know, I had this Antonio Banderas type voice in my mind saying, you know, the forbidden query, like the Lombada type thing.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it's very, very intriguing, this forbidden query word. But they're not able to run these queries because they can't. Because if they ask the query, even against a very large structure, even against a cloud infrastructure, a great cluster, it doesn't give them a return. I mean, it will actually fail. The query is too large and has too much computation to it and asks too many questions against the hardware to where it can't really compute. We're able to run those. And I think that there's a whole aspect of what, as far as algorithms and questions, and I'm going to base it down to questions. For most of the users out there, you know, they're going to have questions, not really an algorithm. They have a question they want to ask, and they don't have a way to ask that question and get an answer because it might be just too difficult. So we think that we're the piece that's missing. We're not the guys developing the algorithms. We're not the ones doing the visualization. We're doing the engine behind it that allows them to ask these questions that are very difficult and the forbidden queries.
That's interesting. There's four now when it comes to big data called volume, variety, velocity, and veracity. Veracity is a new one that's added in there. I don't know if that fits in from a grammatical perspective or not. You know, I think it's always challenging to try to understand what to do with all this new data that's out there as far as the medical community goes, as the finance community goes. But if you look at those categories, medical, finance, security, it almost falls step in step with what the federal government does. I mean, there's a huge medical community, the federal government, there's a huge security community, of course, and let's not forget about the financial community and just understanding what happened the last 10 years on Wall Street. I think that's almost a big data question in of itself, isn't it?
Well, what we'll find is that, and what we believe over time is, you know, this graph analytics becomes a bigger and bigger piece of what people do. And as we see people moving more towards this semantic database and being able to do the analytics on it, what we see in RDF and Sparkle actually becoming more of an industry standard and utilized, much like it'll be as well known as SQL. Right now, you know, SQL language is something that's very common amongst IT users. We think that RDF and Sparkle will become with the same type of commonality. But, you know, over time, there's so many different applications you can have with graph analytics. There are so many. It really applies to almost every aspect of our life. And a lot of times what we find is that when we start doing an examination is that they've built a relational database or they've built some sort of IT infrastructure to model something that really is a graph but doesn't do it very well. So I think it'll be very a common thing. You know, the way technology is moving and the accessibility that people have to technology today through apps and other things, you know, graphs will be a big part of, you know, everything from financial to medical and those very serious things like security and intelligence. I mean, I think those are the easy hits to make, right? There's also things that make life better, and I think that it goes all the way down into you know, the very common things like, you know, workplace environment, environmental controls, traffic. It'd be great if we could solve the traffic problem around here, wouldn't it?
No, yeah, that in and of itself is a pretty big problem.
It's a big data problem, right? And it's a big data graph problem. Massive, difficult. We see those as the problems that we can solve in the future.
We're going to have to take a quick break when we come back. Talk more about maybe your Twitter handle and Twitter feeds and security and where you see this whole idea of big data heading in the next 5 to 7 years, because no one could have predicted the number of mobile devices and the amount of information just exploded. And we may have to run out of terms like petabyte and yottabyte and zettabyte, and I don't know what's next. We'll have to come up with new terms for describing the amount of data that's out there. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Tim White, Global Head of Government Intelligence with Yark Data, a Cray company. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Tim White, Global Head Government Intelligence with Yark Data, a Cray company. We're talking about kind of a new approach to big data and how to manipulate that data and how to take advantage of all that data. If you would like to pursue this further, you can go to their website. It is at yarcyarkdata.com. They have white papers there, and they've got their slogan, which is a well-known brand on a brand new mission. Kind of snappy, isn't it?
I like it.
It sounds good.
And you say it so well.
Oh yeah, I don't know. It sounds like a real good balanced, even kind of little rhyme there and whatnot. Well, this is the part of my show where I hold your feet to the fire, and I give you this very, very scientific 10-question test. And I determine, and the listeners determine, if you are in fact a card-carrying nerd. And so I hope you are prepared for the big 10 questions here. First question is, the year you bought your first computer.
I believe it was 1975.
75?
TRS-80.
Whoa. That's pretty remarkable.
I did the Great Echelon from TRS-80 and upgraded to the Compaq 64, and then, you know, it's been geeked
ever
since. Wow,
yeah. Year your first cell phone?
1994.
That's respectable. It's not impressive, but respectable. And do you have a Twitter feed?
Personally, I don't. Usually on Yark Data, at Yark Data. So.
Yeah. And do you have a blog?
We use the blog off for most of this. It's off of our Yark Data website. It's a great blog. There's a lot of heavy-hitting thinking that goes on there, and I encourage people to look at it. If they like this radio show, then they should go back and look at this.
Yeah, and their Twitter feed, I think, is Cray_INC. So it's at Craig_INC. Just regular Cray is trouble. And do you use any personal online backup?
Sure. Dropbox, as well as I use, of course, the me with the cloud with my Apple devices.
Okay. What flavor of smartphone do you have?
Two. I have the HTC for the Android, and I have the iPhone 4. I have not upgraded to the 4S, actually, but not upgraded to the 5 as of yet.
Platform agnostic. That's interesting. Number of apps on that iPhone of yours, buddy?
Hundreds.
And do you have a tablet device?
Yes.
What kind?
I have an iPad.
An iPad. Okay. And what social networking sites do you participate in?
LinkedIn, Facebook a little bit more. That's the family and the wife that run that one.
Okay. And the last book you read, was it electronic or paper?
Paper.
Oh, you're doing so well to the last question. Well, you were borderline nerd, but you're normal. I mean, you're just normal, I'm afraid. You're just in the bell curve of normalcy. But you were trying to be an outlier. You're pushing it.
Would it help if I said that after I read it, I downloaded electronically so I can reference it?
No. That doesn't count. That's like cheating after the test or something. So I'll run this through my UNIVAC computer, or possibly a Cray computer, because you can get them on eBay now.
I'll get
a Cray computer and run it through, and I'll print it out in my green bar and put the analysis in an envelope and put it in the U.S. mail to you, because we got to keep up with technology here. That's on right. Federal News Radio. You know, I kind of facetiously talked about yottabytes and petabytes and zettabytes, and it's, I mean, I don't know where I've been doing this for years and years. I could never have predicted this. I never would have predicted that there are 50 million people in the world who have cell phones and they don't have electricity in their own homes.
Yeah.
Who could have predicted that? I thought you wanted to have running water and electricity in your home. Well, guess what? People now would rather not have water than lose their iPad. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the question is, where's this all heading? You know, I mean, Cray has been involved in big data and high-speed computing for decades. Can you get an idea of what about those smart folks out in the West Coast who think deep thoughts? Where does it head in the next few years? I mean, is there any way even to predict where it's going to head?
Well, I think it'd be difficult to nail that down exactly. I mean, because if you look at even the last 3 to 4 years, there's been huge changes in everybody that's dealing with this convergence of data, the big data problem. I mean, all of these catches that come up, and of course, then security that goes along with it. So over time, I think there'll be some leveling, if you will, of how data, there'll be some leveling of how data is actually looked at and how much is actually available. But you know, a couple of things I brought up before, I think I'll bring up again, is that really, when we look at relationship databases using SQL, I think the movement is towards NoSQL for a lot of analytics. We're seeing a lot of movement towards that. I see RDF and Sparkle as being more of a standard and becoming more of a commonality. Those are all things that in my mind, you know, that's why we're actually pushing them forward. But on a larger sense, where you know all these devices and everything is going, you're seeing some infrastructure changes, if you will, you know, within how the infrastructure is utilized, IPv6 and how things move. I think that this ties in real well with sort of a semantic approach to data and more of a human thought. So there's going to be some interesting changes over the next, I say, 5 years. I think there'd be some interesting changes over the next 6 months to a year. And it's hard to kind of follow what's going to happen within that time frame.
There is a conference coming up in New York in a couple of weeks on the semantic web. And I noticed the two sponsors are IBM and, let me see, Yark Data.
Yark Data, right.
And so I'm saying to myself, well, IBM has this thing called Watson, and they're doing, you know, big things with big data, and you're doing big things with big data. And so I'm wondering if the semantic web, is that the undercurrent here between the large organizations looking at manipulating petabytes of data?
I believe so, without question. I mean, the accessibility to be able to run those queries. I mean, one of the things in a large scale is you want to look at what's the cost of being able to run a query. And, you know, the cost effectiveness also involves a time sequence. So if you cut down that time and you're able to ask more questions rapidly and you're able to access that data more rapidly and point to that data more rapidly and do all those things in a more fluid and dynamic type environment. So you can also have users, more users that can access it. It's not, oh, excuse me, I have to go back and pull the guy out of the IT shop so that he can come here and help me write this query or help me build this to do certain things. It's really more user friendly. That's where things are going. It's, you know, the accessibility of high performance computing, you know, at large. Probably the best way to define how this is all going is that, you know, over time, and you can see, I did say I had a TRS-80 back in 75, right? So I understand, you know,
Trash 80, we know them.
I went to school working on a widget, you know, so mainframe computing. So, you know, you look at consolidated, thin client, thick client, distributed, you know, personal computers, the internet, you see things collapse and expand and collapse and expand. And, you know, if you look at people's power, and there's a lot of people that have solar power and, you know, rainwater catches and filtering no water. So there's a little autonomy that they can actually do now that they couldn't do in the past. But if you look back 100 years ago, they did more of that, right? So there's sort of a cycle for a dependency on infrastructure and then some autonomy. And so, you know, when you see these movements back and forth, that's really what I see, is that there's changes in how we expand and contract culturally. And, you know, going back to the semantic web piece, is really this kind of flows with that, right? You could utilize this in an individual on a desktop, or you could utilize it for a very large network. And it's something that can kind of transcend those technological movements that go expansion and contraction, and even the cultural movements that go expansion and contraction.
You know, is it a cultural adoption, you think, makes this transition to, I think we're talking about standard support for big data, but this is a transition in standards that are popular now, or to standards that maybe are more easily used with the size of information?
Right. Well, that's, you know, the classic problem you have is that you're, you know, just because you do something 100 times faster doesn't mean that the people are going 100 times faster. You really have to look at that. And, you know, I implore most of my customers to take that and understand it, that, you know, I can tell you that I can do things 100 times faster, but are your people going to be adapted to do that? And, you know, running them through a training course, and I really love these, you know, 2-day seminars where everybody's an expert. That's not really, all you've done is expose them. You haven't really had them culturally adapt to it. There are changes that are coming, and as those changes come, what you'll find is there's cultural resistance, and not out of ignorance or lack of intelligence. It's really going to be culturally, you're asking people to change the things they do on a day-to-day basis, and that's difficult for anybody.
So when people read press releases with Hadoop in it, and the little elephant, and everyone goes, oh, Hadoop, you're not a competitor with Hadoop. You actually work with Hadoop to help solve unique problems for different organizations.
Right. That's exactly it. We consider ourselves to be an augmentation and enhancement of the normal infrastructure that, you know, any organization has. Again, you know, we have a front end that is a Linux box. So it plugs into anybody's IT infrastructure. It looks just like a Linux box on their system. So it's very easy to bring it into an IT infrastructure. And that's one of the things we know is a hurdle. And that's why we built the appliance to do this. The second part of that is, I think that when you look at Hadoop and large cloud computing or even distributed data sources, you know, this is an appliance that allows you to be able to utilize the power of that in a much more enhanced methodology, and really something that it'll appeal more to people and not have so many cultural issues as far as changing the workflow.
A qualitative change in handling big data. That's what it sounds like.
Hey, I like that. I'm going to have to put that on the website.
Yeah, we'll put that in well-known brand new mission, and we'll put qualitative change.
It seems
like a qualitative change because everyone's got these big fire hoses out there. Well, who's going to put an adapter on it and have it split in two ways or connected into a water or something to use that big data coming at you with so many things coming at you. Interesting talking to you. I think we can come back in 6 or 8 months and find out more about where Crate positions itself, where Yark Data positions itself, or maybe organizations that take advantage of this and maybe solve some of the larger data issues that are plaguing many of my listeners. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest Tim White, Global Head Government and Intelligence with Yark Data, a Crate company.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.